1 Corinthians chapter 7, verse 1. Now concerning the things whereof ye wrote unto me, it is good for a man not to touch a woman. Nevertheless, to avoid fornication, let every man have his own wife, and let every woman have her own husband. Let the husband render to the wife due benevolence, and likewise also the wife to the husband. The wife hath not power of her own body, but the husband. And likewise also the husband hath not power of his own body, but the wife. Defraud ye not one the other, except it be with consent, for a time, that ye may give yourselves to fasting or prayer and prayer, and come together again, that Satan tempt you not for your incontinency. But I speak this by permission and not of commandment. I'll leave that there for a second. I just wanted to get that last verse. So they had written to him about concerning certain questions. Obviously, this first one he's touching on is marriage. And as he's going to say, and the idea of marriage and celibacy. Is it better to marry? Or is it better not to marry? Is it more righteous to marry? Is it more righteous not to marry? And certainly, he's going to make a good case for his own estate. In verse 7, I didn't read it, but he says, I would that all men were even as I myself. He wasn't married. And not just men, he meant men and women, you know, that all could remain, you know, and there's reasons for that. But he was saying, you know, it's good for a man not to touch a woman. For a man to be, you know, touches in that figurative sense, that means, you know, to lie. Literally, I mean, it's haptomai, which means to fasten to, or to hold, or attach, or to touch. But it's in the sense of to be, connected, in the sense that we were talking about in the last chapter, in that carnal sense, right? I mean, and it's not just, well, Paul, would you be a little more specific? Well, I don't mean, you know, remember a former president questioned about the definition of what sex was. You know, in all many ways, you know, it can be many things more than just intercourse. It can be the way you put your lips together. Can be, you know, there's a holy kiss and then there's a not so holy kiss. Meaning in the sense of between two people who are not married, it's sex. I mean, there's a sex kiss and there's a not sex kiss. That's as plain as I could put it. So even a kiss certainly could be, you know, considered in this idea of not touching a woman. I mean, you know, what? You're just going to do that and then call yourself celibate? Or call yourself pure? Those things are, you know, and if you don't like it, well, then get married. And that's the solution. It's like, to avoid fornication, you know, which is, again, fornication, porneus, we get our word porn from it, but it means all forms of sexual immorality, and defined biblically and through the wisdom that the scriptures teach. You know, I mean, a lot of this stuff is not, like as Paul says, this is by permission. A lot of things I say are by permissions. It depends, you know. When it comes to things like, yeah, when it comes to questions like this, you can tell when I'm talking by permission. Because I start to think about it. When I preach the gospel, and I'm talking about the truth, I just say it. I don't have any, you know, but there's things within the gospel. Obviously, the questions come up. What's righteous, right? We need to know what's righteous so that we know if we're lacking something. You know, through Christ, ultimately, we're receiving righteousness and we're just performing it. And it's not something we have to have a checklist. The only purpose the law serves ultimately to a Christian is to testify to the righteousness which is in us. I mean, the New Testament law, because you can be a 100% righteous Christian, but be a very, transgress many Old Testament laws. There's laws about what you got to eat, what you got to wear. And Paul says about all that, hey, the meat for the belly for meats, but God's going to destroy it all. All those things are lawful, not everything expedient, but all of those things are lawful. So again, back to the man and the woman, the husband and his wife, and he says, you know, to avoid fornication. Literally, the word "to avoid" isn't there. It just says the Greek word there is dia, which is like through or on account of. Nevertheless, on account of fornication, so it's not to avoid is the implication. I mean, it's a good ellipsis, but that word is just not there. It's a different word in the Greek. But anyways, let every man have his own wife, every woman her own husband. It's a good, there's nothing, you know, as he's saying, there's nothing wrong. Because you understand, you come into Christianity, especially back in the first, now these days, this question is sort of like, what's the big deal, you know? But back in the first century, they really wanted to be this, they really took this righteousness and holiness thing seriously. They thought, maybe we shouldn't get married. After all, as long as you have a wife, you kind of are having sex. And sex is kind of, I mean, throughout history, it's been a taboo subject. And, you know, I know that the Catholic Church had a lot of problems with it. You know, but according to the scriptures, there's no sin in marriage. Or in that. That's what that's for, is to for an outlet for all that. The passion we have for one another, what it was created for was that we would come together to make children. You know, obviously that's a, but it's more than that. You know, it was for that, but look at what he says here. He calls it, but he's not saying here, you got to make kids. You know, because I know there are some people out there, and I've run into these people, they say, oh, anytime you're not trying to get pregnant, it's wrong. You know, they say, you know, that it's recreational sex. Like a husband and a wife having intercourse together would be sinful if they didn't try to get pregnant. And they say, well, that's sinful because the whole purpose is to... But you know what? I don't find that anywhere in the scripture where it says the only purpose for sex is... In fact, in the New Testament, and granted, this is by permission, Paul says this. So it's his opinion, but it's my opinion too. This isn't a commandment, but this is what he says. Let the husband render to the wife due benevolence. You know, that word due is to be under obligation. And benevolence is kindness, eunoia. By implication, the conjugal duty, meaning, and that's here, you know, meaning he's using that as a euphemism, render to her the kindness she's due. And what kindness is she due? What, that she should get pregnant? Is that the kindness due? Likewise, the wife to the husband. Well, how can the wife render to the husband some sort of obligatory pregnancy? He can't get pregnant. She can't render anything to him except pleasure. So we see, that's what he has in mind. Because the whole point of being married is to avoid fornication. These people who go around saying, oh, it's sinful to have intercourse with your wife, are just a bunch, you know, and they, you know, the thing is, they want to bring people into bondage. They don't want to let them enjoy the freedom of what God has given them in marriage to help them. Look, I know ultimately, for me to be like Christ, lust has to die. And that's why Paul talks about, you know, and I think as long as you're married, it's sort of there. It's not in an unrighteous way, but you long after your wife. You know, there's a certain desire. But, I guess I felt like I wanted to go on more about those who say you shouldn't do it. Unless you're, because it's just bunk. It's nonsense. It's absolutely right. I've considered it because I want to be right. Right? This is the Apostle Paul's opinion. And as far as I'm concerned, Whatever he says by permission, I take a lot more seriously than what a bunch of people who transgress the doctrine of Christ say. Because whoever transgresseth and abideth not in the doctrine of Christ does not have God. So those who say otherwise, I don't have much respect for what they say, honestly. I have a lot of respect for what the Apostle Paul has to say about it. The wife doesn't have power over her own body, but the husband has power over the wife's body. Power being control. Because it's exousiazo, which exousias, there's several kinds of words translated power, but one is like dunamis, which is power. We get like dynamite, dynamo, so on and so forth. But it's like that innate sort of power. But this is exousias, which means authority or delegated control, you know. And so that's what it means. It's like the wife doesn't have this authority over her body. The husband has authority over the wife's body. And the husband also doesn't have authority over his own body, but the wife. See, anyone who would say Paul is sexist is wrong. See, in certain things, there's absolute equality. You know, the husband owes his wife and the wife owes her husband. Her body belongs to him. That's my body. And his body belongs to her. That's her body. You know what I mean? You don't have your own, you can't just do unto yourself, you know, whatever you want. And that's why, and then in regards to that, he says, defraud not one another. Which means to spoil or deprive. Except it be with consent. For a time, meaning there's a limited, you know, you could consent with each other and say, hey, for a limited time, we're going to not come at each other and dedicate ourselves to fasting and prayer. But then come together again, that Satan tempt you not for your incontinency. I mean, anyone who's married or who got, like I got married for one particular reason, I mean, other than being in love, obviously. But I wanted to be, before I met the girl I was going to marry, I knew I wanted to be married. Because I had a certain incontinency. I had a lack of self-control. I thought I need to satisfy that lack of self-control. And so I decided, I mean, I could have done it many ways, right? There's all kinds of ways to satisfy that lack of self-control that so many people exhibit. But I knew that the only way I could please God and still satisfy that very strong desire that is natural to humanity would be to be married. Because in marriage, God has ordained a way in which, because he put these desires in us. And he knows how powerful they are. So he gave us a way to deal with it. Be married. You know. Part of the reasons he gave us those desires was so that children would be made. Obviously, if sex was like painful for both parties, probably the human species would have died out long ago, you know. But that's not the only reason. I mean, the thing is, that, you know, it's not just made that way just for children. The whole this scriptures verse 4 and 5 is not. It proves it's like it's there for your pleasure. And you shouldn't, you know, deprive one another of that kindness. The kindness towards the husband, the kindness towards the wife. It's not the kindness towards the future generations. So, you know, you shouldn't deprive one another, except maybe for a season or so. Maybe you want to devote yourself to prayer, fasting. He says, I speak this by permission. The word permission is I don't have the word, but I wrote down co-knowledge. So that means there's probably sun or sum gnosko or sum whatever. Oh, sun nome, I found it. It means, you know, co-knowledge. It is this sort of What does he mean by that? You know, but I suppose by it means by the, I've got the Spirit of God in me, and I have this knowledge, and this co-knowledge, this knowledge that I have together with him, in him. It's not a commandment. This is not like, an injunction, a divine decree, like, this is, you know, how it is. What he's saying is, he's trying to make it clear. He's saying, I'm not commanding you to separate and then for a time and fast and pray. But I have this knowledge. And, you know, again, this is not, it doesn't take away really the authority of what he's saying, because when he says permission, when you initially read that, you think, oh, you know, but it's not really the word permit. Concession? But anyways, there's this idea of, maybe that's the, maybe the Greek word for permit had that, not, you know, I only go as far as my notes that I made the last time I studied. Like I said, I don't do a, I'm not here to examine split hairs and all that, okay? But I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, don't minimize the importance of what he said just because it isn't a commandment. There are a lot of things that aren't commandments, but there are promises and there are good things in scriptures. So this is, you know, if someone can't control themselves or God hasn't given them the grace to control themselves, marry. There's nothing wrong with that. He says he's just giving it a absolute stamp of it's okay. But he's not going to command everyone to be married. Why? Because, I mean, we could say, hey, you got to just get married. Everyone get married. You need to be married. You need to be married. I know churches where they arrange marriages. But Paul says, for I would that all men were even as I myself. But every man hath his proper gift of God. One after this manner, and another after that. I say therefore to the unmarried and widows, it is good for them if they abide even as I. But if they cannot contain, let them marry. For it is better to marry than to burn. And to the married I command, yet not I, but the Lord, let not the wife depart from her husband. But, and if she depart, let her remain unmarried or be reconciled to her husband. And let not the husband put away his wife. But to the rest speak I, not the Lord. Oh, well, hold there. I'm going to read verse 12 and again. I just want to cover this part about divorce and so on and so forth. So, you know, he's saying, hey, you know, there is a proper gift, charis, which is the same word from which we get grace. You know, they have a proper gift of God, one after this man. You know, there's some people, their gift is to be not married. Some people, their gift is to be married. You know, Paul maybe doesn't have this understanding, but to be a father, to win fathers, you know, to raise up sons. Just like he says about when he talks about elders in Timothy, he says, I want them to be the husband of one wife, having raised their children in subjection. Paul immediately puts on these things that's like, well, you know, technically, if you're going to be a real technical about it, I don't think you have to in that sense, but Paul himself would have been disqualified from eldership because he wasn't married. But again, I'm not going to be all literalist about it as far as, you know, obviously. But you know what? There is something to be said for having had raised a family and so on and so forth. Again, not just raised any old family, but raised having had their family in subjection and showed, you know, good stewardship in that, right? What are their kids like? So that is one, you can have a gift in that realm. But a lot of people, you know, there's a certain desire. People that get, they hear of God and the Lord and they really want to serve him in purity. and not get all tangled up in the worldly affairs. I know. I mean, look it. I understand. It's like, I think about my kids, and I think, like, gosh, you know, my goal in life is to be martyred someday. And, you know, it's like, well, martyred, that word is kind of misunderstood these days. It literally means to testify, to be a witness. I want to be a witness of God. Martyr. Most people think of martyr, you know, and I do want to give my life in the course of that witness. But martyr, you know, people think of people going and suiciding themselves. That's not martyrdom in the Christian sense. So I want to be careful about the use of that word martyr, because obviously in other religions it has a little different implication. I don't want to die just for, I don't want to die to hurt people. I want to die for the testimony of Jesus Christ, that I might live. And then I want my children to live, you know. But then I think of all the trouble that's going to happen in between then and there. And I think, like, gosh, you know, I got all these kids. And it's, you know, I try not to put my mind and think of, like, the potential heartache that could come to me or to them. And then sometimes I feel like I want things to be delayed because of that. And, you know, but I can't help it one way or the other, really. I feel, how I feel is how I feel. And what the Lord does is what the Lord does. I'm ready to submit to whatever He does. Even though knowing very well that that may result in a very painful outcome for me. I don't wish it and I don't pray for it, but I do not resist. I don't want to resist God. And I hope in saying that, and when I say things like that, I hope that by being that, I'm going to have His blessing and grace because of the way I approach Him. You know? And I say that only just for your sake, so you understand this is how you need to approach God. Willing, though not denying your own feelings. And I use as my example Jesus Christ in the Garden of Gethsemane. You know, He pled with God, but He was ultimately resigned. Even before that day, he was, I must go, I must do this. But even on the eve of it, His heart, He felt all the feelings, all the emotions that any man would feel going into such a thing. And maybe that's part of what I need to suffer. And like I said, it's like, though I do not wish it on me or on any man, I know this, that other men go through it all the time. So what makes me think I'm more deserving? I'm not. Is let it be for the kingdom of God's sake. That's what I say. It's like, Lord, if I have to suffer, let me suffer for the kingdom of heaven's sake. Not for just something random or something meaningless. Let it be for the kingdom's sake. And then I'll have a lot of peace in it. For I would that all men were as I myself. Hey, one give this way, that way, that's a general principle. You know, everyone has their own gifts. Everyone has their own... I apologize for the yawning. Again, I teach late. I've been very busy lately. You know, and so again, he says to the unmarried and widows, it is good for them if they abide even as I. Hey, a lot of people had a desire. You know, they were widows, they were unmarried, and they think, I don't want to get married. I just want to serve the Lord. But if they cannot contain, literally exercise self-restraint, let them marry. For it is better to marry than to burn, which means to kindle or inflame. You know, people burn in hell, whatever, burn in lust. You know, personally, I think that's what it means. It means to burn in the, you know, I think of Paul's reference, he uses a similar and let me see here, I'm going to check this real quick, and different word, okay, still same concept. He says, this is not the same word for burn in Greek, but it's the same idea. It is burning. There it means like whatever, enkindling or whatever, but this is inflamed, okay? Verse 27 of Romans 1 says, and likewise also the men, leaving the natural use of the woman, burned in their lust, one toward another, men with men, working there, which is unseemly, blah, 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 blah. So again, there we have the idea of burning in lust. The thing is, and that's the thing, is like, you know, you're not, and I take that has to be the, you know why I think that has to be? Because, that's all, you know, it's like people, if you are inflamed, you know, and lust and so on and so forth, that's the worst thing that's going to happen to you, you know, in this life. You're not going to burn in hell in this life, but you will burn in lust. And that will cause detriment to your soul. You will suffer for it. Certainly if you're a believer. Certainly if you like, if you at first dedicate yourself to God in the idea of being celibate and pure, and then turn, if you were to, from that, turn towards the using a prostitute or something like that, that's a pretty grievous sin, you know? And I, you know, Paul wants us to avoid that. So it's better to marry than to burn in your lust one toward another. Because those are the options. You can marry or burn in lust. Which is, you know, which means, you know, and I don't mean, you know, can, what about, isn't this kind of the same when you marry? Yeah, but the point is in marriage, it's a different story. The burning is always, you know, it harkens back to Sodom and Gomorrah. They burned in their lust, and then God burned them to the ground. Now, today it's not likely. Some fornicator isn't likely to explode into flames. And yeah, I know, in the end, fornicators are going to be thrown into the lake of fire, where they will be destroyed. But still, the immediate consequences are what I think that's what Paul has in mind. And this I say by permission, co-knowledge, than by commandment. Okay. To the married I command, yet not I, but the Lord. This is a commandment here. Let not the wife depart from her husband. So I object. You know, in Christianity, we are not supposed to depart from our spouses, right? Period. That's it. You know, the thing is, outside, let them that are out, they do what they want. I mean, you know, I'm not here to run everyone's life. I'm just saying, if you're going to follow Christ, don't leave your wife. Don't leave your husband. Now, if she depart, let's say the husband beats the crap out of her, okay? I think what he's saying is there is some sort of, you know, I could see her separate herself, because the word depart is to be separate. You know what I mean? So if she has to separate from her husband because, let's say, oh, she might get killed. Or, you know, let's say the guy's a drunkard. He flies off in rage. He beats her frequently. She thinks he's going to kill her. She might need to separate herself. But then, if she's a Christian, she ought to remain unmarried or be reconciled with her husband. Then let the husband put away his wife. Same thing. Notice the husband can put away his wife, and the wife can depart from her husband. The scripture never speaks of a wife putting away her husband. Jesus never talked about a wife putting away her husband, because back in those days, a woman could maybe leave her husband, but she couldn't divorce him. It wasn't done. There was no law by which women were able to do that, you know. Though it wasn't right for a man to do it either. There was, like Jesus said, Moses gave you certain regulations departing because he knew the hardness of your hearts. You know, if a man put away his wife, what the law was mostly punitive. Most of the laws concerning divorce is like, you know, concerning what the punishment is for a man for divorcing his wife. And if a man is a good Christian man in righteousness and uprightness and goodness, what woman would leave him? No, I know a lot of women today I've had women tell me that's like, well, if I was your wife, I'd divorce you. But, you know, a woman who is in love with a man, and he's a godly man, and a righteous man, she won't go away. If he treats her right, if he loves her as Christ loved the church, and vice versa, every man wants a good woman, you know? I told someone I was married, you know, someone said, what, you know, someone was talking about the women at the bars or something. I was like, yeah, well, women are, you know, like I made some commentary about, you know, how difficult it can be to find an appropriate spouse. And I was, except for mine, of course, I was talking up about her. And then he said, what did you do, marry a saint? And I said, yes, I did. And he wanted to know, well, where can I get one of those? Men want to be married to good women, you know? Women who are going to be true and good to them and serve them. Because a man, you know, women always expect men to serve them. And then when a man expects her to serve him, it's like, because of our modern sensibilities. And I don't mean like he should command her like she's some sort of slave. But I render service to you, and I expect you to render service to me. Not just in the, we were talking about that, the kindness that is due in bed and so on and so forth, but also in just service to each other. It would be cooking, cleaning, and I mean either way. You know, whatever works out. I don't think any, but, you know, women should, well, whatever. Paul gave advice in other places, you know, let them marry, raise children, etc. In fact, he said about widows who are under the age of 60, do not receive them because they would wax wanton against Christ. Meaning they would not be able to contain themselves, he's saying. Let the women, he says, the women under 60, he says, don't receive them into the widowship, so to speak. Let them be married. You know, if someone wants to keep a virgin, maybe that's a gift. But women who have been married, unless they're old, he advises they should get married again. Now, again, not through divorce. And, well, what if someone comes to the faith, they're already divorced? Well, I mean, you know, things, you know, the thing is, things happen in life. You know, life is a broken mess. You know, there's all kinds of sins. And you got to be able to put the past behind you ultimately. You know. Sometimes, you know, divorces come about. Again, let's look at this next part. Verse 12. Because this is, I was going to go into this just now and I realized, well, I better read the verses first. But to the rest speak I not the Lord. Again, by that co-knowledge, and then through the Holy Spirit that's in him, he's giving his best, the best knowledge he has. If any brother hath a wife that believeth not, and she be pleased to dwell with him, let him not put her away. And the woman which hath an husband that believeth not, and if he be pleased to dwell with her, let her not leave him. For the unbelieving husband is sanctified by the wife, and the unbelieving wife is sanctified by the husband. Else were your children unclean, but now they are holy. But if the unbelieving depart, let him depart. A brother or sister is not under bondage in such a case. But God hath called us to peace. For what knowest thou, O wife, whether thou shalt save thy husband? Or how knowest thou, O man, whether thou shalt save thy wife? But as God hath distributed to every man, as the Lord hath called everyone, so let him walk. And so ordain I in all churches. Looking back at verse 12. With the concept is simple. If you're married to someone who is not a believer, and they are happy with you, and in many cases that could happen, you know, a good Christian man, and let's say, you know, you're already married to someone, and then you become a believer. I would never say that a Christian should marry a non-believer. I don't think that's not a good idea. Of course, if you're just a nominal Christian, it wouldn't really matter. That's why a lot of, you know, nominal Catholics marry nominal Jews, because they love each other. It's not about their religion, you know, because their religion is just, that's no big deal. It's just what holidays they're gonna celebrate, you know. It's funny how they cling to their little traditions, and it's like, oh, I want to raise my son Catholic, and I want to raise him a Jew, and, you know. As long as they got some sort of religion. Well, I'm not that kind of person. I take this very seriously. If you are a Christian, in my opinion, if you are a true Christian, if you are my kind of Christian, if you are my brother, you know, you are an heir of God. And you're called to something higher than the rest of the people. Okay? So more is expected of you. You need to have, you know, it's like, I at times when my wife went through some hard times, I say, you know, I always expect God to deal very well with you because you're my wife. And you, that, so by virtue of that, that has to make you something. Now that sound may sound a little arrogant to some people, but you know what? That's the way I live. And I don't, you know, to me, it's not about the way other people, I mean, to the world, we're nothing. But to me, she's everything. And God has given me that woman for my life, you know. And it is a great gift in my life. Now, if you're called and you're already married, right, and you've got someone who's an unbeliever, but now you become a believer, or you're married to someone, or let's just say whatever, you know, you're in that situation. If they are pleased. Now, let me look at the word please. Soon eudokeo. To think well of. In common. Oh, that's the soon. Soon is like together or co. To think well of in common, or. And that's interesting. Because soon is here. So that co-knowledge I was talking about could be like knowledge in common. Or, you know, that common knowledge. Common sense. I like common knowledge or co-knowledge. But anyways, to think well of in common, that is to assent or to feel gratified with. You know, and to me that's like, it's not just they say they're that way. Let them also be gratified with it. I knew a brother, and I speak this for his sake, because his wife would say she would not want a divorce, but she hated him, you know. It was not assenting or gratified with him at all. I don't know what she wanted. All she wanted was him to stay and pay bills, you know, to keep paying for the house she was living in and to go sleep on the couch. Wouldn't render him his due benevolence. Wasn't pleased with him, abused him. As far as I'm concerned, he's not under bondage. God has called us to peace, not to live in hell. And that, you know, the proverb spoke truly. It's better to live in the corner of a rooftop than with an angry and contentious woman. And the same go for a man, I know, for you ladies, okay? I know you probably feel just the same. I mean, except for you, it would be more like with a drunkard, blah, blah, blah man. You know, I don't know. There are certain qualities in each sex that sort of, the way men see women is not the way women see men. There's just sort of a difference there. So, if they depart, let them depart. He gives this concept here that, you know, that the unbelieving is sanctified by the believing. You know, like I mentioned, my friend's relationship, a lot of that happened, you know, when he was not, you know, the thing is, a lot of things happen to us in our lives when we're not in full possession of the truth. Me included. I've done many foolish things, advised foolish things, participated in foolish things, not really knowing what I was into. Okay. But a man who is truly of God in Christ and married to one who is not, yeah, you sanctify. But don't let that, again, let not this be taken by anyone to say, oh, go marry an unbeliever. Bad idea. If you are one of God's elect, do not just go do that. Just because you, you know, though ultimately speaking, yeah, it's better to marry than to burn. You know what? Like, I know people who are, you know, I know someone who's living with the girl they love. They want to marry her. They're not married. All right? Sleeping together and so on and so forth. And I just get married. You know? Do right. Because to me, it's like, you know, you humble someone. Because the scriptures, that's why they speak of it. It's like when a man would lay with a virgin, it says he hath humbled her. He shall not depart from her all the days of his life. If a man lay with an unmarried virgin, unbetrothed virgin, because a betrothed virgin would be absolute, that would be a crime. But an unbetrothed virgin, if he lay with her, he would have to marry her, pay her father a fine, and he would not be allowed to divorce her. There's a lot of things that, you know, but that was that nation, you know. But I'm just, these are concepts, though. I mean, you know, I'm not trying to say this is the way we should run our civil society these days. I'm not trying to tell the civil society anything. I'm trying to tell Christians how to govern their own lives. See, the thing is, I don't need to wait around for the U.S. government to pass laws about righteousness. That won't work. You know, all those people seeking to do that, as far as I'm concerned, they're fools. I do not look for that. Why? And that's the thing that gets me. It's like they want to go around. They have beams in their eyes. They're still sinner saints, and they want to make everyone else better. Get the beam out of your own eye, Christianity in America. Quit being such a bunch of hypocrites. Maybe if you had a shining example of righteousness, other people would look at you and want to emulate it instead of you trying to stuff it down people's throats. What do you know, wife? What you might save your, you know, just by, again, he says, this is for, talked about in other books, other epistles. I forget if it was Peter or Paul. In Timothy either, or possibly even Titus, but or possibly in the writings of Peter, it doesn't matter. But he talks about, you know, if a woman, not, you know, yeah, I think it was Peter. You know, if the wife, the wife with her godly behavior might win her husband, you know, 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 1. Likewise, ye wives, be in subjection to your own husbands, that if any obey not the word, they also may without the word be won by the conversation of the wives, the behavior, while they behold your chaste behavior coupled with fear. You know, he's saying, you know, let their adorning be so on and so forth. But what he's saying is, you know, let's say they don't respect the word of God, but they might respect you. The word, you are the, you know, as Paul talks about, you know, you are our epistle, read of men. You know, the spouse themselves could be the word of God to that unbelieving spouse. I mean, though they will not listen to the Bible, they will look at your behavior and see how you are and be won. They could be won by the gospel that is preached from your mere actions in obedience to God. And this God will do. You know, that's how you, in many ways, that is a way in which the unbelieving can be sanctified. They can be made holy by our holy, if we are holy. They are one flesh with us. If I'm holy, then my wife was holy too. Because she's joined with me. And so God, though he's called the husband, he calls husband, if my behavior is right, and I have to believe in faith, it's going to abound to my quote unquote unbelieving wife if I had one. Fortunately for me, I don't have that. But as God hath distributed to every man, as the Lord hath called everyone, so let him walk. So, God has distributed, he has apportioned, he has part, you know, he's given out different, you know, gifts to different people, right? As he has done that, and as you have been called, you know, you have one person has one calling in one direction, another person has a calling in another direction. There's all sorts of callings, you know? Well, walk according to the calling of God. Walk according to what God has given you. So I ordain. Again, that's the verb of commandment was epitage. This is epitasso. And, well, I don't know. It sounds similar to me, but I guess whatever. It doesn't, I don't think that actually the words are particularly related, but it's ordain or appoint. Institute, prescribe, whatever. I'm ordaining this in all churches. Sometimes I laugh at myself with the way I go over these words sometimes because it's like ordain, attain, you know, ordain, prescribe, institute. You know, again, it's just because sometimes different words are used to, sometimes different words are translated the same. And other times, the same word is translated differently. And so in kind of sorting through all this, I kind of like to look at these things. And I'm taking you through my study. So I'm just opening up my mind when I teach. Just these are the things I go through as I read this. This is how the thoughts that are provoked in me as I go through this. I'm just sharing the gift God is giving me with you. Verse 18, is any man called being circumcised? Let him not become uncircumcised. Is any called in uncircumcision? Let him not be circumcised. Circumcision is nothing, and uncircumcision is nothing, but the keeping of the commandments of God. Let every man abide in the same calling wherein he was called. Art thou called being a servant? Care not for it. But if thou mayest be free, use it rather. For he that is called in the Lord being a servant is the Lord's freeman. Likewise, he that is called being free is Christ's servant. Ye are bought with a price. Be not the servants of men. Brethren, let every man wherein he is called therein abide with God. And this is a kind of a complicated thing. You think, well, Paul, well, it doesn't sound complicated to me. Well, it does to me. Because I see several nuances. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Because in the one sense, he's saying, you know, you could take this in a too much of a wooden literal sense. Let every man abide in the calling wherein he was called. Meaning, whatever you were doing when you got called, you stick with that forever and ever and ever. I mean, we just gotta stick with that. He called you in this, you know, let's say you were a bricklayer and he called you. You stay being a bricklayer. And I'm using that because just as a quick, easy thing I had to think. I don't want to, you'd have to be stuck in the same place. I mean, are you called being a slave? Be a slave forever. But he doesn't say that. He says, but if you may be made free, use it rather. You know, then be free. Again, because God may be, he's calling you. stay in the calling of God. I mean, he's called you to become a son of God. And if you are called being a servant, again, you render your service not unto a man, but unto the Lord. That's why he says, don't be the servants of men. You're the servant of God, slave or free. Use freedom to serve God. But know this, he that is called being a servant is the Lord's free man. Likewise, he that is called as being free is Christ's servant. You understand? You become free. Not as much changes as you might think. You know, let's say you're called, you're a slave. Be content in that. Serve God in that. Now let's say you're made free. Well, you're going to use that. But now you become the Lord's slave, whereas before you were his free man. And so freedom may not be for you what you expected. And I say that, and I made a little face as I said that. And I'm like, well, do I mean that? Well, you know, what I'm saying is, in whether we be free or whether we be bond, whether we be rich or poor, whether we be whatever state we happen to find ourselves in our calling of God, abide. But, you know, and knowing this, in the midst of that, God may call you to something else. You may be called being poor, right? Abide in poverty wherein you were called. But the Lord may take you out of it. You may be made rich. But what I'm saying is, in those things, be content. In whatever situation we find ourselves, we need to be content and serve God according to the calling we've been given. You know, I mean, nobody's called and, you know, nobody starts off an elder immediately. You're a new believer. Well, now you're an elder. Well, that just doesn't make sense, right? You've got to walk before you can run. And again, he says, are you called? Let's look back at what he's saying. Are you called being circumcised? The Jews were circumcised. And maybe in some of the Gentiles early on may have been circumcised because the Jews were commanding it. Let him not become uncircumcised. That sounds kind of weird. You think, well, that's not possible. Some people I remember years ago on a radio show listening to some guy, and their whole organization's goal was to grow their foreskin back. And whatever it took, whether it be hanging weights, I'm going to start laughing. You know, they would, surgery, what, you know, they had all, I don't think they used surgery very much, but they would have all kinds of little techniques and devices to restore that part of the body. Kind of stretch things out, I guess. And, whatever. Some people, you know, never get over that, you know. I mean, I understand it happened. I mean, I was a baby when it happened. Two of my sons had it happen when they were like 5. I just think that's cool because they'll remember it. I know they don't like to be reminded. But, uncircumcision? Are you called not being, don't become circumcised. You know, are you called being a Jew? You don't have to not be a Jew anymore. You know, again, you call being a Gentile, you don't have to stop being a Gentile. Meaning, according to, again, circumcision is nothing, uncircumcision is nothing, but the keeping of the commandments of God. I don't think this is given in the sense of that's what circumcision is, keeping the commandments of God. Except it be keeping the commandments of God is the way I think of this, but in that terms. Meaning, there is nothing profitable in circumcision except that you were keeping the commandment of God. But now, Christ has called us to a greater thing. You know, this is back in the time when this was still a question. These days, it's sort of like, you know, I mean, a lot of people are circumcised, but it was for medical reasons. And now the medical community has moved away from that. So a lot fewer people are getting it. Uncircumcision is nothing except you keep the commandments of God. Well, how do you keep the commandments of God if you're not circumcised? Well, If you're called being uncircumcised, then don't get circumcised. You can keep that commandment. You don't have to become, meaning you can testify to the liberty that is in Christ. It's another way in which we do not follow the old law. Calling, it's always in the context, it's in this idea of like Jews and Gentiles, freedom, bond, it's in, the lifestyle type things. Meaning, let's say you get called, now you think you're going to flip your whole life upside down. Like some people might be like, I found Jesus, I'm just going to leave my family and go preach the gospel. Don't do that. Are you called being a family man? Don't stop being a family man just because Jesus came along. I'm going to go serve God. You serve God best by first taking, if any man provide not for his own house, he's denied the faith. You've got to provide for those of your own household, your immediate family, or you've denied the faith. So, if you're called in that, you stay there. If you can be made free from your family, meaning they grow up, right? Then when that time comes, then use that. You don't have to, unless God leads you, you don't have to, adopt more children, And then you can go serve God. In fact, that's why I rejoice being a family man, because I feel like over time, obviously now I have to wait. My children will be grown, and then that'll be a testimony. I have a certain expectation. And I have certain works that I do and I intend to do. Thing is, you raise little ones a certain way, and as they get older, you raise them a little different. I think sometimes my wife frets about it, but it's like, I have plans. Again, what are you going to do with prepubescent kids? Except what you can, Do what you can at the appropriate time. We are bought with a price. I mean, he owns us. Whatever we're called in, we got to serve him. He called us in a place where it is good we serve him, We don't necessarily have to jump in and try to get these radical changes. But abide in the calling in which you were called. Meaning, and again, in these sort of lifestyle type things. Now, art thou called being a homosexual? Don't change a thing. He's not saying that. Art thou called a drunkard? Don't seek to be sober. Art thou called? What is the calling in which you're called? See, you gotta understand. It's like, God called me. I was a fornicator. I guess that's what he wants. I need a fornicator. I guess I'll take old Joe. No. Because if that doesn't help you understand what I mean and why I'm saying understand this properly, and plus the fact that, God, through time, can cause slaves to be free. He can cause the rich to become poor. He can cause the poor to become rich. He can cause the owner to become the slave. He can cause cause uncircumcision to be circumcision. How's that? Maybe some people come through and force it on you, Or maybe medical reasons. They say, you gotta cut that off. Things can come up. I don't know, God changes things. But let him do the changing. Let us not be the ones, a lot of things can come from us. We think, we pray. It's us who really want it. But we're trying to put it on God like it's his job. He will lead us. And obviously, it's a very subtle art discerning where God is leading you. And discerning, and regarding whether or not it's temptation or whether it's something else. I mean, how do you know you're really being led of God? And I can only say that through patience, experience, knowledge, studying in the Word, prayer, and all those things, greater wisdom is procured and a certain knowledge of where the Holy Ghost is leading you. And what is, and discerning also the what is the leading of the Holy Ghost and what is just other stuff. Again, I like verse 24 because it says, let every man wherein he is called therein abide with God. But if God moves on, move on with God. That's I'm adding that, okay? And I say that not by commandment, but by knowledge in common. Knowledge of the Holy Ghost. Because I know what Paul means by this. He doesn't mean, obviously, look at it. He says, if you're a slave, all right, but if you could be made free, well, then use that. As I'm reading, the reason there was a silence there is I thought, there's a possibility, I suppose, and I haven't consulted with other translations, but he might be saying, I know this is grammatically possible, you know, if you may be made free, use it rather, use what? You know, use rather, use or employ, it might mean, continuing employment with your former master, or it might even indicate, in spite of the possibility of being free, if you can become free, use that possibility rather as a testimony. I mean, these are things you can this is a possibility too. Again, I'm not trying to hammer this down into try to run your life, you know, so to speak. But abide with God in your calling, okay? Sometimes the opportunity to have change could be a temptation. Maybe that's not where God is leading you. But he wants you to know, he wants you to abide wherein you are. Now, concerning virgins, I have no commandment of the Lord. Yet I give my judgment as one that hath obtained mercy of the Lord to be faithful. I suppose, therefore, that this is good for the present distress. I say that it is good for a man so to be. Art thou bound to a wife? Seek not to be loosed. Art thou loosed from a wife? Seek not a wife. But, and if thou marry, thou hast not sinned. And if a virgin marry, she hath not sinned. Nevertheless, such shall have trouble in the flesh. But I spare you. But this I say, brethren, the time is short. It remaineth that both they that had wives be as though they had none, and they that weep as though they wept not, and those that rejoice as though they rejoiced not, and they that buy as though they possess not, and they that use this world as not abusing it, for the fashion of this world passeth away. Should probably keep on with that, but hold on. Let's just go for a couple verses here. Now, concerning virgins, I have no commandment of the Lord. Virgins meaning, you know, a maiden or an unmarried daughter. What do you do? I have a daughter that's unmarried. Nowadays, daughters just go off and do whatever the heck they want, right? Not so in the New Testament times. Not so with my daughter, as far as I'm concerned. As far as I'm concerned, yeah, I know by the law they can do whatever they want. Right, but that doesn't stop me from doing, from trying to exercise my control. I'm not going to physically put anyone in chains, but on the other hand, I could put chains of the heart by love and by word. I will bind those I love to protect them. Make sure they marry the right person. I don't plan on softening on that one bit. Some things are not negotiable in my mind. People say, well, we'll see. So, he gives his judgment. As one that obtained a mercy to be faithful. He had obtained, he was faithful in many things, but especially in the fact that he was not married and he was faithful to it. It is good for the present distress. For the what's at hand right now. The things that were going on. That it is good for a man so to be. A virgin. Maybe male or female. I said daughters before, but really it's either or. It doesn't matter. And he says, are you bound to what? Again, interestingly, he says this in the context of, well, in this present distress. Because I tell you what, like troublesome, that's what I talked about before. Having kids, I think troublesome times come. Let's say, great economic turmoil, all kinds of, banks failing. I mean, we already have that. But I mean, let's say they're always like, oh, it's going to get worse. Okay, I don't know if it's going to get worse or not. I frankly don't care. I find that not much has changed in my life because I don't watch the news. And I suppose that would, I guess I check out Newsweek and other publications from time just to see what are they flipping out about these days. Always flipping about something. Something's always going on. Everything's going wrong. I mean, I tell you the truth. The country has to go down the tubes sometime because ever since I was a child, they've been telling me how we're going to go down the tubes. And, seems like time is about ripe, right? Doesn't it? I mean, since I was a kid, Social Security was going to fail. I mean, I'm talking about when I was 12. I remember, because I was into this kind of stuff as a kid. I was a political science major. I was going to be a politician someday. God had other plans. I was called, see, that's my point. I was called a college dropout. So I do not seek a college degree. Or man's approval. I was called rejecting my teachers. That's interesting. Now I think about it. I went to school. I rejected the education they were offering me. I rejected my teachers. I was called a rejecter of those, of teachers of the earth, of philosophers, of religious teachers. I was called a rejecter of those things. I will abide in that calling. So in the midst of these troubles, do you have a wife? Don't seek to be free from her. Are you loose from wife? Seek not a wife. Again, in the calling you're in. But, and if thou marry, thou hast not sent me, I've told people this. I'm like, they really want to get married. I'm like, maybe the best thing you could do is just not care so much about it. Though granted, when I found a wife, I really wanted to find a wife, but she appeared from a place I did not expect. I had my own plans of how I was going to go on all these first dates and maybe just phone calls, get introduced to girls and eliminate them very quickly. I wanted to go through, I thought I'm going to probably have to go through hundreds of girls to find the right girl. I'm going to probably have to date hundreds and hundreds of girls before I find the right girl. And I thought, well, I know how I can eliminate most of them just from, a 1 minute conversation. I could eliminate probably 90% of them. And the other 10% I could probably eliminate on the first date or sooner or whatever. And then that 0.0001% that I was looking for. Well, God didn't, before I even got to do the first date in that little plan, the Lord sent me the woman I was going to marry. in an accidental meeting. But in any case, I really want to be married and I got a wife, okay? But I was 19 at the time. I mean, 20 when I met her. So, I was kind of young and foolish, right? I know these things, but this is good advice in any state. If I had had maybe a better situation with church and so on and so forth, maybe with people who would look after my soul more, with greater wisdom, someone could have encouraged me this way. Because I didn't find a wife by seeking for one. Truly, though I was going to seek for one, I wanted to seek for one, I didn't, for first time I met her, I didn't realize that this was the woman I was going to marry. I had no idea. I didn't even think of her like that because I was in my Bible study at the time. And when I teach the Bible, I don't really have thoughts for other things. I just am focused on what I'm talking about. So at the time, I didn't think of her like, oh, this is a potential wife, you know. Didn't think that. It took me weeks to start thinking that. And her continuance in the Word played a big part in that. Anyways, we don't want to we want to be content in whatever state we're called. I think he says that later. Or maybe he already did. But, you know, if you marry, you haven't sinned, and if a virgin, there's no sin in marriage, okay? Even though, like, maybe you were trying not to. There will be trouble in the flesh. The word trouble is pressure. But I don't think, oh, well, pressure, what do you mean? I'm just saying. It means trouble in the sense of, like, tribulation, you know? And again, like I said, there are troubles that come. This is funny because I tell this people all the time. People want to be married. I'm like, you want to be married? I'm like, well, you know, by being married, you will experience pain and trouble that you would never have if you would stay single. Just so you understand. You know, I mean, is it worth it? Yes, it was very much worth it for me. I'm very glad. Some people, it ruins their lives, though. Okay. For godly people, I want to encourage them to marry. I mean, it's been very rewarding for me. But I said, don't be shocked when trouble and pain come on you. Because in relationship, you can't have growth without some sort of pain. Because people are immature. They're young. They don't know what they're doing. You know, they get married and it's like they hardly know themselves. How do they get to know another person? How do they feel for another person? What they really want? What they really need? My wife would always get sort of a little perturbed with me declaring all the pain in marriage. So I always declare also the great joy. I mean, great joy. I mean, apart from the kids even. I mean, I just mean in the sense, and I wasn't even thinking of that. I was just thinking of just the relationship. For me, it's been nothing but a gain. You know, and then bless the children, there's a lot of joy in that. But I'll tell you what, there's trouble. There's trouble in marriage. There's things, you know, your faults come out, her faults come out, you know. These things you have to work through. There's all kinds of, I'm not going to give a marriage seminar, but there's a lot to it, you know. It's not just happily ever after. I don't know, for some people, whatever. You know, they have their, on the radio, there's, you know, there'll be ads for matchmaker services and how they, oh, they just, they, oh, I found my soulmate. I always hate that soulmate. I just don't like terms like that. It's not scriptural, and it's just sort of like, makes me feel yucky. Because my soul isn't married to my wife. My body is married. I need my flesh mate, not my soulmate. My soul is married to God, you know? My wife's soul is married to God, too, in that we're all together. You know, but in the spirit, she's my brother. I guess, and that's the sense of like, that those, I like verses 29. These are awesome, you know. The time is short. It's shortened, actually. It remains that both they that have wives be as though they had none. when the time comes, when the trouble comes, the end of our lives, the end of the world, whatever. I know Paul probably had that in mind. You know, the end times is like the troubles that are now, and we're going to have troubles. Right now, it's kind of, you know, they got the economics. I don't call that trouble. Trouble for me is when persecution arises for the gospel's sake. Like, oh, the banks are failing. Oh, boy, who cares? Oh, I've got financial troubles. Oh, you bet. I don't even count that. To me, that's, oh, yeah, okay, financial troubles, whatever. I trust God. He's already shown me a way out. Thank God. Thank God for good brothers. Brothers, I meant brothers. For a good brother. But again, you know, so if you have a wife... Troublesome time, you know, that's the thing, is like in this calling, there may be a time when I'm called, things change. I have a wife, right? I'm called having a wife. I should have a wife, right? Well, now God moves on, and now I got to be like I didn't have a wife. You think about Peter, he had to leave his wife and family. Yeah. We forsook all to follow you because of the time he lived in. And that can come about. You know, Paul, get you up from your house and go. Go speak to the people in such and such a city. Turn their waters. You know, stretch forth your hand over their waters and turn it to gall. Gall, I don't know what I'm talking about. You know, turn it to blood. Turn it to bitterness. I don't even mean in a figurative sense. Yeah. Turn their waters to blood and speak to them. Do it in their sight. They're having a big, you know, and then where's your family? Oh, I just left them at home. Can happen. They that weep as though they wept not, and they that rejoice as though they rejoice not. They think, you know, you're called a certain way. Times are changing, you know. Lay aside your sadness. And do the Lord's work. Lay aside your joy to do God's will. We have to sometimes lay aside the things of our lives, our passions, our joys, our sadnesses, to do the will of God. They that buy, so, you know, you're buying stuff. We live in that consumeristic society. We all buy and possess and, you know, he's saying... Possessed is interesting. Kateko means to hold fast. It's the same word used saying he who now restrains or he who now letteth will let until he be taken out of the way in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. He who holds fast. Just for reference, it's no particular reason I'm referencing it just because the word's the same. Just thought I'd remind you of that. But then again, those that buy, let's say you have possessions. I have possessions. I've bought stuff. I mean, I got a lot of good stuff. I've like all these educational DVDs. I've got books, right? I've got a computer here. It's necessary for the ministry I'm currently in. You know, though I long after a ministry where I don't need any of this stuff. You know, because I long for a ministry where the work we're doing is so where they want to televise it, you know? We don't have to go looking for, we don't have to buy TV time because their news crews are there. That's what I look for. And this is, as far as I'm concerned, this ministry is going to lead into that. I was looking back, oh, what do I got? I got a phone. I see a lot of books, a printer, all this stuff. I got a lot of stacks of bills, but thankfully I don't possess those. I have a lawnmower. I've got a rototiller. I've got a car, 2 or 3 or 4 or 5, all of it with over 150,000 miles on it, and most of which do not currently operate. But I still own the title on them, and I like to be an owner of them. I hope to fix them someday, because I can't afford to pay someone else to. But you know what? Someday I'm going to have to be not holding... here's the thing. Come into ownership as though they did not hold it fast. I don't want to hold on to the things I own. I don't want to be, like, clutching it. My possessions, oh, my stuff. Clinging to it, and when I look around, it makes me sick. Oh, I got a camera. I want to clutch into the camera or some video games over here. I want to clutch to those things. Oh, precious. God forbid. My house. My land. I don't want to clutch it. I gotta have a loose grip on these things. I pray God give me the grace to raise my children in one place, you know. I don't want to uproot them. But I don't want to hold on to these things. And personally, it's mostly for the sake of those around me that I do. I think if I was alone, I would have no sure dwelling place. Because I'd want to be like him. But for the stability, you know, like... I could forsake it if God called me. You know, but I'd have to leave it to them so they could live. But then again, I pray that I'd be given the time to raise my family so that they might serve God as well before I'd be called away to any sort of service like this. And they that use this world is not abusing it. Abusing is to overuse. You know, that is what that means in Greek. They overuse the world. Oh, that's like saying, you know, I have liberty. Oh, I have liberty. I can watch television. How much television? What kind of television are you using? Or overusing? Have you considered? I consider all my ways. I think about it. I'm glad when the Lord puts things in my heart, like, to change. I love it when I change. Because I feel like, especially when it's for the good, obviously. Thankfully, I haven't had any changes for the worse. You know, it's been made better. Slowly, but, you know, it's like... like the punctuated equilibrium, which is a funny word. It's actually a term that was brought into use concerning evolution, because suddenly new species appear in the fossil record, right? And the time over change is sort of punctuated with these changes. You know, there's equilibrium, and then it's punctuated with these sudden changes and stability. And that's what you observe in the fossil record. There's all, you know, there's certain animals, and then all of a sudden, suddenly other animals appear. Whatever. That's how they look at it. But to me, that's like me, you know. I stay the same for a while, and then it's punctuated, and there's a sort of equilibrium, right? Stability. And then all of a sudden, God delivers something new to me. A change. Bam! Evolution. A new creature is born. And I wanted that to keep happening to me until the fullness of Christ be formed in me. That's the whole purpose I'm in the faith for. As far as I'm concerned. I mean, yeah, resurrection of the dead, sure, all that. But again, not to the exclusion of the work that needs to be done right now. And so many leave that work off so foolishly. But these are questions they had, and the only reason I'm covering them is because they're questions that were brought up in the scriptures. These are, you know, I'm not a marriage seminar guy, okay? The fashion of this world passes away. Jesus said in the kingdom of heaven, they will neither marry nor give in marriage, so it's passing away. So don't think too heavily on it. Verse 32, but I would have you without carefulness. He that is unmarried careth for the things that belong to the Lord, how he may please the Lord. But he that is married careth for the things that are of the world, how he may please his wife. There is a difference also between a wife and a virgin. The unmarried woman careth for the things of the Lord, that she may be holy both in body and in spirit. But she that is married careth for the things of the world, how she may please her husband. Again, don't take that in an absolute sense like, that's all they care about. No, but it's a distraction. You have to care about your wife. I gotta, you know, there's grocery shopping to do. I mean, if I was just shopping for myself, it would be a really quick trip. But I'm not shopping for myself. I'm shopping for my wife, my kids, my kids, my kids, my kids, my kids, my kids, my kids. And the dog and the cat. And the chickens. And the house. The family's gotta live somewhere. It's one thing when you're by yourself to have no shared dwelling. You're going to drag a family through that? You know? Living in caves? Hey, kids. What are we eating tonight, Dad? Tree bark. Worms. What's to drink? Rainwater. Oh, here, look, a raven brought us something. Carrion. Being a little facetious, I hope I don't have to ever eat carrion, but which is, you know, what a carrion bird eats, you know, rotted flesh and such. I hope they'll bring me something nice, like a loaf of bread or something, you know. The bird, you know, whatever. So let's stick with this. So, what he's saying is, I would have you be without carefulness, which is not anxious, not distracted. I don't want you to be distracted with the things of this world. He says, no man that warreth entangles himself with the affairs of this life, that he may please him that hath called him to be a soldier. The thing is, being married, you will always be entangled with the affairs of this life, either through children or just through having a wife. There's a certain entanglement. I mean, I suppose a childless couple, well, they have less entanglement. Every kid is a little more entangled. Right? That's why I want to be called with my kids kind of grown up. Because that'll reduce my entanglement. And clarify things for me as far as like, you know, it's like, when you have that freedom, it's a lot easier to listen to God's will. You know, like, do you make them, or, you know, if you follow after something you think is God's will, and let's say you're wrong, if you have a family, like, and you think God's calling you to do something, you could hurt your family, and it's not the calling of God. If you're by yourself, you don't hurt your family. But I gotta care for the things of this world. My wife, she's of the world. Because there's no wives in heaven. So to speak, in the kingdom of heaven, I should say. In the kingdom of heaven, which is coming to earth, there is no wives for those who are those who are with him in the kingdom. Even if that is me and my wife, we won't be husband and wife anymore. We'll be brethren. As in the spirit we already are. Let me tell you, value your counsel. But there's a sense in which of the world, it's like, you know, my wife's got to care for the things of the world. Why? Me. And in many ways, it's such a distraction. It's a distraction. You know, it's a distraction. They want to be pleasing to their husbands. So they think about stuff like that. You know, they may have concern about, things related to that. I don't want to go into detail. Why do I not want to go into detail? Because I care for the things of the world. I care for the things of my wife. Now, I have a duty to protect her. In more ways than one. So anyways, Paul is saying it's good because without those things, there's less distractions. I would have you less distracted. But again, he said, that's why if you're married, the time may come when you have to be as though you're not. at least in the spirit. I mean, being ready to let go of it, you know? I mean like this, being prepared to watch your wife and children be slain before your eyes and still give a testimony to God. And I always hoped that they could see me give testimony to God and watch me be slain. But what if I have to watch them die first? You know how that would rip people, rip me up? You know what? But for the glory that would be revealed, I submit myself as not having a wife or children, but as having brethren, fellow heirs. That's how I look at them. That's how I look at any such sacrifice. Recant, Paul. No. You know, because you always see in the movies, right, when they threaten your loved ones, it's always a mistake to give in to that. Almost, you know, most always. Because they, especially when it's for a greater evil. Ah, understand my wisdom. I don't mean to make reference to movies and nonsense. I'm just saying, you've seen examples where the wicked try to abuse someone's love. Okay, that can be a burden to service. Oh, I deny the Lord, just don't hurt my family. I don't want to be that man. So God help me. And just I speak to your own prophet, not that I may cast a snare on you, but for that which is comely, and that you may attend upon the Lord without distraction. You know, a lot of these things could be like a snare, literally a noose is the word snare. I don't want to give you a rope to hang yourself with. Meaning, again, he's sort of debating almost with himself, like, be married is good, being married is a distraction. So he's saying, you know, he's saying things like, it's good not to be married so you can care for the things of God. And I'm not saying this so that you could, like, because how would you hang yourself in that? Well, to say, oh, I'm not going to be married. And then I'm going to serve God. I'm going to do the Christ, blah, 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 blah. And then you end up fornicating. And you would have been better off just getting married than being a fornicator. So he's saying, I don't want to give you rope to hang yourself by saying it's good not to be married. But it's true. I just want you to know I wanted to profit you for that which is comely. Comeliness is that which is well-formed. You know, well-formed, decorous, noble, you know, of a good figure, literally is what it means. I mean, bodily figure, but, you know, but it can be in that application, obviously. That you could attend on the Lord without distraction. And I see that in my own life, man. The things of the family, they're a distraction. And I don't regret it, but I do know that it's like, yeah, it's like if I was, but you know what? I would have hung myself if I had used that. I'd be a fornicator. If I, you know, in fact, if I lost, there are certain points in my marriage, if I had lost them, it's like it would have been a horrible tragedy for me, not just in the sense of losing them. It would have been tragic spiritually because it would have led me to all kinds of sin. And as he said also in Timothy, I believe, about, you know, widows indeed and so on and so forth, that, you know, if they're young, they're going to wax wanton against Christ. And they will marry. So just make them marry. Keeping virgins. There were people asking these questions. You know, today, it's sort of, you know, should I keep my virgin forever? 144,000 in the book of Revelation. These are they which were not defiled with women, for they are virgins. So, verse 36 is kind of self-explanatory, but sort of confusing at first. But if any man think that he behaveth himself uncomely toward his virgin, if she pass the flower of her age and need so require, let him do what he will. He sinneth not. Let them marry. So behave uncomely in the sense of what? He's saying, well, what is comely is that they may attend the Lord without distraction. That's the most beautiful form, right? That is beautiful. Don't be married. You know, there's a certain glory, there's a certain attraction. I'm not going to be married. I'm going to be single. I'm going to serve God. I'm going to focus on that. I'm not going to be distracted with the things of this world. But if a man thinks he is, again, think is the same as suppose in verse 26, which is to reckon, to nomizo. You know, he's saying, the reckoning. If you reckon that you are behaving uncomely toward your virgin, meaning, let's say, whatever you're doing, let's say that you think by keeping her a virgin, you're doing something not good for them. I mean, they're not able to attend upon the Lord without distraction. Why? Because maybe they really want to be married. And he's trying to keep her a virgin, and she wants to be married. And if he's seeing, you know what, this isn't working out for good. She's hating God. You know, I'm just using, you know, a possible example. She doesn't, this is not causing the love of, you know, they're not able to attend on the Lord. She doesn't want to attend on the Lord because I'm keeping her a virgin. You know, I mean, there's that whole essence of that forbidden thing. It can become very tempting. And so, and if she, what does it mean, past the flower of her age means to become a full age. So if she's a full age, old enough to marry, and needs to require, or figuratively, to be under obligation, or to owe, or it ought to be so. Meaning, it seems like the thing that ought to be done, like she ought to get married. You know, maybe, the, you know. Again, he's saying, use your judgment. Use good judgment. You don't arbitrarily just keep a virgin. You know what I mean? That's what he's, in all this, you can see throughout this. There's not, he's like, I'm saying this by permit. You know, he's adding all these words so you understand. It's like, he's speaking a lot about it, and he's giving words on it, but a lot of this has to go with your sort of, you got to use your intelligence God gave you and the knowledge of all the scriptures and wisdom and pray for wisdom. And in this sense, you know, we have to answer to God. And so we should seek him and try to answer and try to, you know, behave ourselves and execute our lives in a manner consistent with what he's teaching us. Nevertheless, he that standeth steadfast in his heart, having no necessity, but hath power over his own will, and hath so decreed in his heart that he will keep his virgin, doeth well. I wonder if it means, I almost like to take this in the sense of virginity. Or, you know, his virgin daughter. You know, now no necessity is constraint. I mean, let it not be done by constraint. I mean, a lot, okay, we're talking about societies where fathers cause their daughters to be married off. They would marry off their daughter. They would have to be consenting to it. Girls didn't just like find a guy, bring him home. Actually, find a guy, sleep with him a couple times. Decide whether or not she liked him. And then start going out and then bring him home. Oh, my boyfriend. nothing like that. Again, this kind of virgin stuff that he's talking about, teaching it is almost like today's society. It's almost, I might as well just burn this out of my Bible. I'm not kidding. It has almost no relevance. And here I am at the end of the chapter. I'm thinking, like, did I even teach you anything profitable in this? I hardly even know. You judge. Yeah, I see some certain things, right? But I mean, this stuff about virgins, I mean, it's almost like today it's just a joke. What virgins? Well, there's a few, I know. But I'm just saying, well, will I marry my daughter off or not? How many times that question come up today? Never. Whoever thinks that, not in this country, maybe in other countries, maybe in Muslim countries or in countries where they have a different kind of culture. In our modern American culture, daughters decide for themselves what they want to marry, whether or not they want to marry and who they want to marry. That's all up to them these days. Among most people. Again, it's really a cultural thing. You know what I mean? Because, like, you know, it doesn't have to even be by law. It's just what, you know, a father obviously decides whether or not who his daughter's going to marry. You know, a guy wants to marry a girl, he'd approach her father. Say, I'd like to marry your daughter. And he says to him, well, what will you give me? And what assurance do I have? What kind of man are you? What are you, you know, and he would check the guy out. Whether or not he'd let that guy marry his daughter. And then he might see what she thought about it. He might not. A good father, I think, would want to know what his daughter's opinion was of the man, right? But again, with an understanding that it was his authority. He had power of his own will. She's not controlling the situation. He is. So if he's decreed in his heart, he will do well. And I don't think that necessarily, like I said, it's like, there's no point in keeping a daughter a virgin who is a full age and she really wants to be married. Because honestly, the desire to be married is as much a distraction and maybe more than actually being married. So it can be a worse situation if you don't just let him marry. That's why he says, let him marry. You know, let him marry. Don't be, you know. But, you know, if she be content and serves God and does those things according as Paul said, and the guy doesn't have to, like, go looking for a husband for her either. He could just let her stay a virgin. If she's willing, and he knows he wants, that's what he wants in his heart, then that's awesome. Because that's what he says. Again, like I said, in today's society, it's sort of like, yeah, whatever. I'm going to try to fulfill this. So then he that giveth her in marriage doeth well. Okay? Even though he's given her to something that's going to distract from the Lord, you know? Doesn't mean she can't serve the Lord at all, but she's going to have something else to serve. But he that giveth her not in marriage doeth better. So again, let it be done according to wisdom. And like I said, it's who hearing my voice is going to do this? Who hearing my voice is going to take this advice? It's like, oh, Paul, if you only knew how the world has changed. And how just empty this seems to me now. How sad. How much we've lost. I said, well, it's wonderful. The women are all liberated. Oh, yeah. Wonderful. It's just so wonderful. They just go sleep with whoever they want. They get pregnant, they can just get an abortion. You know, hey. Better, you know, or just keep her well stocked with condoms for all the penetration she's going to be experiencing. These things are not so to be. Certainly not among Christians, okay? But in Paul's whole society it was, okay? And I'm not, like I said, I'm not here to change this society. I'm here to see it destroyed. But not by carnal means, but by spiritual means. Not by an army from the earth, but an army from heaven. He comes on his white steed to dismantle the world order as it stands. And I stand for that. Technically speaking, that makes me enemy of all that is extant in this world, of all the ways, all the governments, all the religions. I stand in opposition to all of it. And I seek by prayer and by the things I exercise myself in studying and preparation to see it all come down. Alright, verses 39 and 40. The wife is bound by the law as long as her husband liveth. But her husband be dead, she is at liberty to be married to whom she will, only in the Lord. Again, marry only in the Lord. But she is happier if she so abide, after my judgment. And I think that I have the Spirit of God. So he's saying, you know, I think my judgment's pretty good here. Again, acknowledging once again that this is not commandment. He's speaking by, but rather this sort of knowledge he has by the Spirit of God. This co-knowledge, meaning me and the Spirit. Spirit and I. Spirit, me, and the Spirit of God in me, instructing me. That verse 39 is very similar, I think, of in Romans when he talks about the law. Know ye not that the law hath power over man so long as he liveth? That's why we have to die to sin. We have to be freed from it. We are made free by dying to it in the Spirit. How do you die to it? You know, do I just do it? Do I just slash my wrists spiritually? Put a gun to my head spiritually? I mean, you know, how do I kill myself and still live? I don't know how it's possible. But with God, all things are possible. I was buried with him in baptism. How does baptism bury me? Because you were under the water. Yeah, well, but that, how does it bury me? How does it raise me in newness of life? It's all by the blood of Christ. By the power. How does blood have power? By the Word of God. The Word of God says it has power, so it has power. It's the power to perform all those things. I feel like I can't, you know, like, how can I close out the study without talking about the power of the blood of Christ? Because all these other matters, ultimately, I say this, you know, Paul, they had questions, okay? And people have questions. It's generally not my focus. Next time it'll be things offered to idols. Another one that's sort of like, whoosh, but there's principles in there. Just like today, we had principles in the seventh chapter of Corinthians. I think there are principles worth understanding. I don't think it was a waste. By no means. We still get married, right? Even though we don't have virgins anymore. Or it's very rare. Those of you who have virgins and keep them, I salute you. I do. I really do.